So figuring out how to use the integrity framework to have real and honest conversations without making it personal on that level is tricky, but it's something that I think everyone can learn. Hi, Aspen. This is Trisha, and Jim is right here with me on Zoom.
Hi, Aspen.
And we want to keep the conversation going about the integrity framework. So, it's been a lot of fun to get your feedback on the first two podcasts and to hear about your interactions with each other. And so we want to just come back and do one more. So what do you think about starting with a review?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. And I think it's a good place to start because as you and I and others have worked with this integrity conversation, because there is a different meaning of integrity that's out there in the world than we use, I think it you just have to hear it several times for it to sink in and be useful. And so, we would say that integrity is about living into our design as human beings and into our design as a company. We have two definitions. One of them is workability, the systems and structures, the communication and the relationships of the organization are workable. And then the other is you have integrity when you're giving and keeping your word, making big promises, and then by definition, cleaning up messes that get made when those promises aren't kept.
Yeah, that's a good review. And if all that doesn't sound familiar, then you can go back to the webinar recording or to the first podcast recording and fill in some of the gaps there. I think what we want to do today is to anticipate and address some of the, but what about, those things that come up that make us think, I'm willing to use this integrity framework. Maybe I'm really even drawn to it, but there are some obstacles that I don't know how to get around.
Yeah. I mean, I've already had some coaching conversations. and the yeah, but was not like resistance. It was like, I am drawn to this, but there's some questions about how you use it and what, how you learn what you need to learn in order to do this. So I think addressing the yeah, buts is a helpful thing.
Yeah. So here's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that we've identified is the breakdowns that happen when we make promises without clear and effective communication in the system at Aspen.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of different ways that shows up. But, when that happens, when people are making promises without having clearly and effectively communicated, breakdowns occur. And then it just kind of goes downhill from there.
It's been really interesting for me in these calls this week
to have some questions raised. And as things are currently structured at Aspen, the way that I understand that it's supposed to work is that it's the studio, the PA, the PD, the PM, who are making promises to the client on behalf of the entire organization. And that's most workable when they do that with input of the disciplines and the functional teams of leadership. And, there's not an all or nothing. Like there's a ditch on this side of the road, on one side of the road where I make those promises without any communication. And there's a ditch on the other side of the road where I make promises with communication, but in the communication there's conflict or disagreement and I don't work through those disagreements. Both of those become big obstacles.
Yeah, I think this is a place where systems thinking comes into play.
For sure.
Because it's so easy when we're, down in the work to forget that, the whole system impacts the promises that we're able to make. And the promises that we make impact the whole system. That it's never just one person or one studio that can do that. And so what happens is we end up either making promises we can't keep or making promises that other people can't keep and creating problems or chaos for them. So a couple of examples that we've heard about are when studios, for example, can make promises without enough input from, some of the other functional groups.
Cost estimating or design or one of those functional areas, right?
Exactly. And so the promise belongs to the studio, but the ability to keep the promise is shared pretty widely throughout the company. And so, you know, we can turn it the other way around when maybe some of those functional teams like cost estimating or design don't communicate effectively, when they don't say what they see from where they sit. That can also create unworkability.
Yeah, I said the workable word is so important here. So if I'm in the room and I see that the studio is trying to make a promise that I don't believe is we can keep, but I also don't want to do conflict. I don't want to have to raise my hand and say, this is not okay with me. I don't see how we're going to get there. Then you're just going to have a breakdown somewhere. And so sometimes that's what happens. Sometimes what happens is the studio leaders are just, you know, going 90 miles an hour. And I know in my own life, I have a guiding principle that says when I'm making a decision that's going to impact someone else, I want to collaborate with them. But what I know is that sometimes I'm running so fast and going, you know, so furiously that I'll think, okay, I need to talk to Tricia about this. But then I'll think again, and then I'll think again, and then I'll wonder, did we talk about that, or did I just think about talking about it? And then there's a mess because I didn't actually communicate with you. And so I think both of those, the fear of conflict and the complexity of all the people involved and how fast paced our lives can be, that can make this unworkable.
So are you saying that the conversations I have with you in my head don't count?
Well, they
that's
probably
a game changer for me.
They probably count for you to get your thinking clear.
But they don't. Joking aside, I think that is a thing about our design, is that we are, as human beings, we are designed to communicate, and we weren't designed to be psychic, right? We weren't designed to be able to, you know, telepathically communicate with each other. We have to stop in time and use words, either written words or spoken words. And that does slow things down, like you said. And at the same time, I think it helps to just remember that it's part of our design.
I think it's also helpful to say that for whatever reason, workability is not there as the studio makes the promise, but there's not broad, effective communication. One of the things to say about that is, as I take that on for myself, what I'm talking about is growing my emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. And that's another conversation for another day, but it's one of the interlocking pieces of skill sets that we're working to develop.
You're saying it's not just about systems or processes.
Right, exactly.
And I think that brings us to another place that the integrity conversation can help here. Mm-hmm. Because giving and keeping our word is a really big part of it. I mean, it's a core definition of integrity. But we also have to be able to create processes that support us giving and keeping our word.
Right.
It's not enough for me to have really good intentions. I have to design processes for communication, for example.
I was in a conversation yesterday where one of our Aspen colleagues was talking about in studio, I don't know if they called it 1.0, but that you had all the functions in the office. You had design in the office, you had cost estimation. They were all in one studio together. And now that's not true. And so it's requiring them to rethink their meeting schedule, what kind of structures they create, and how they create them, how they operate them, in order to do exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, to create processes that will support the places where we're giving
exactly.
and keeping our word, and
exactly.
in particular around communication. You mentioned this a minute ago, but just regularly asking the questions, who else needs to give input to this? Who is mm-hmm. this going to affect? Who needs to know this? You know, what they call cascading communication.
Exactly.
Which I just love that mental picture, you know, of a waterfall.
Right.
Communication just cascades. And then also, how am I going to communicate this mm-hmm. to those people? Because I think One of the places we see breakdowns in workability is when people are trying to communicate in a way that isn't effective for what they're trying to communicate. So, for example, some people are just buried in email. I hear that with everyone I coach at Aspen or elsewhere. And some things get lost in email. And some things need to be communicated by telephone. You know, some people really don't want to pick up the phone. One reason I sometimes hear, and I'm just going to say this, just going to put this out there.
I hear people say,
I know I need to communicate with so-and-so, but if I pick up the phone to talk to them, it's going to be 30 minutes. And yeah. I don't have 30 minutes, and I just need to be able to say one thing. And so I think that that's something that we can just address to make things more workable, to say, this is how much time I have to devote to this, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the final thing that I would say about all of this before we move to the second obstacle is one of the breakdowns in our thinking about this is to say, okay, so the studio is who's making the promise, and so it's their responsibility to communicate. And that's true. And when the studio does something that impacts me, and I don't get communicated with, it's my responsibility to say back to the studio leaders, we've got to develop some structures for better communication. And so everybody's responsible for this. The studio leaders are the point people, but whether you're generating the communication or whether you're on the receiving end of that, we're all responsible for making sure that effective communication takes place.
That's that 200% responsibility we talked
exactly.
about last time.
Exactly. Yeah.
The second obstacle that you and I have named probably does fit into that emotional maturity piece that you mentioned a minute ago. And it has to do with both how the integrity framework is used and also just how we naturally tend to react when we're in the middle of these integrity conversations. And so this is how I think I would frame it, that the integrity conversation can, just because we're human, create feelings of shame or guilt or inadequacy when messes happen. And then we do what it is that we do. I mean, we avoid the mess, or we cover it up, or we hustle harder, or we lie about, you know, what happened, or we try to dazzle with some other kind of productivity, or we get defensive, or we want to fight back. All those things happen when we're feeling this sense of shame or guilt or inadequacy because breakdowns are being addressed.
Yeah, I was in a conversation with another Aspen colleague today where he was curious about what happens when you either take these, you take the integrity, you take this as a tool and you use it rigidly. And he was talking about how tools in the hands of an inexperienced person can actually be dangerous, and I thought that was such a great piece of conversation for us to have. The truth is that all that stuff you just said, shame and guilt and inadequacy, and you know, the ways that we show up to avoid all of those are just normal human responses. We're not bad people because those things show up. That is what happens when you're learning to do something, you're learning how to use a tool, you by definition practice, you're using it ineffectively. And so when all of that stuff shows up, then what you have to do is you have to create some space for cleaning up messes in a non-shaming, non-judgmental kind of way that just says we're all on this learning journey together. And as we get better and better at using the integrity tool, we're going to become more and more effective as a company.
So if I use the integrity framework to say, hey, you said you would do this and you didn't do it, and now you have a breakdown and I'm going to call you out to
shame
to
on you.
The language we used last time. Shame on you.
Right.
That's going to be really problematic.
Right.
And so if you're using it that way, stop. Right.
Or if you use it that way, then go back and clean that mess up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think, though, that sometimes when we come in and we're having these hard conversations and we're not trying to be blaming or shaming, it's still normal to experience it as blaming or shaming.
Right.
We take it personally. We say, you know, oh, well, if you're talking to me now about wanting to do something different, wanting to change the way you do things, then you must be criticizing me about how I did it before and saying that way was wrong. And so figuring out how to use the integrity framework to have real and honest conversations without making it personal on that level is tricky, but it's something that I think everyone can learn.
Yeah, I mean, I can look at my own life and see how, you know, I would get, when I got feedback like we're describing, I would get aggressive, or I would, you know, pull away and, you know, silently judge the person. And I just look at the journey I've been on, and over time, I can get into conversations where the feedback is really clear and I can feel the sting, but I don't get defensive. I mean, I can just see the learning that's taken place over time.
So what do you say to yourself to help you head off the defensiveness?
Well, one of the things that I've learned to do is take some deep breaths, three or four deep breaths. And then the thing that I say to myself is, this is not personal. There's something to learn here. This is not personal. Yeah. There's something to learn here. And I think one of the things that you've taught me is like, you're giving me feedback and it's stinging a little bit. I have to remind myself, you are not out to get me. You are not out to undermine the work of the company. Like, you're giving me this feedback because we have some shared goals and some shared vision and some shared work we're doing together. And, all of those help me with managing my internal reality so that I can stay involved in the conversation.
So this is something that I think we'll look at later this year, but even just being willing to look at our first formation, in other words, our early years, the family we came out of, the school we came out of, and so forth.
Yes.
And be able to say, you know, we picked up some things along the way about what it means to make mistakes or to get things wrong. In the family I grew up in, mistakes were actually handled very graciously. But not making mistakes was really praised. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so there was a high premium on wanting to be the good kid who never made mistakes, who did everything right. And my parents didn't do that to me. That's just what I kind of figured out is, oh, I like this feeling of not making mistakes and always being competent and, you know, people thinking I'm doing a great job. And never getting anything wrong.
And in my first formation, I would get punished for mistakes, and that was always preceded by an interrogation. And my parents were doing this with me because they wanted me to be a good person. They wanted me to succeed in life. But there would be this interrogation about, what did you do, and when did you do it, and what did you say, and who said what, and then after all of that, you were going to get, you know, grounded or some kind of punishment that was going to take place, when somebody comes to me and starts asking questions about how certain things went or why they went a certain way, I can feel those old internal tapes get stirred up. And just like I've learned not to take it personally, I learned to recognize, oh, that's my first formation showing up, but this is not that.
Yeah, yeah. I just want to say, we have other stories about our families, and we know that people who are listening have other maybe more serious stories about how this happened in their families, but just to kind of recognize, how did I learn to be when I was getting things wrong or when I was making mistakes? That can just be so helpful.
In a different realm, but having lots of ties, one of the words I learned when I first began partnering with Aspen was the word gracism. That, you know, there is this thing about this, we are Christians and we're doing work as mission and we really believe in this mission, and Christians are nice. Right? Christians are like by definition, in the cultural stereotype, Christians are nice. And one of the byproducts of that is that it's really hard. I can't tell you how many times I've had, this is changing, but early on, how many times I've had conversations with people at Aspen, and they'd be talking about a problem they were struggling with somebody they supervised, and I would ask the question, so when you give them that feedback, what do they do or what do they say? And often the answer was, oh, I haven't given them that feedback. And when you kind of dig down what's under that is to be direct and clear about the need for performance improvement or for to be direct and clear about a breakdown in communication, that was not nice, you know, that mm-hmm. was going to hurt somebody's feelings. And so we don't do that.
Yeah, we want Aspen to be a place that is grace-filled and safe and all those things. And there are a couple ways to do that. And one way to do that is just to stop doing anything hard, to not say anything that might be hard for someone to hear. But another way to do that would be for us to grow our tolerance, to grow our ability to have those hard conversations. And we'll be talking about that more later this year. But I just think that's the challenge here. How can we learn to have grace-filled conversations that are also clear and effective? I heard Patrick Lencioni say just recently that we hold back on saying what we see. We hold back on giving the feedback because we want to give people the benefit of the doubt. We say to ourselves, you know, they didn't mean to do that, or they don't usually do that, or I understand why they did that. We want to give people the benefit of the doubt. But then they miss out on the benefit of the feedback.
Exactly.
And so they're flying blind. And we don't do them any favors when that happens. And so that was challenging to me.
Yeah,
I also think that leads us to the third obstacle, which is the unworkability of not asking for help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you know, that's just not in the design. It's not workable. As human beings, I don't know everything. I don't see everything. My perspective has blind spots. I can't tell. I can't always know how my behavior is impacting you. And because it's impacting you in a way that I don't see, then I can't be responsible for my communication. All of that is in the mix of not asking for help.
Yeah, and so we can ask for help from our peers, say, what do you see that I don't see? We can, I think, ask for help from other people who may be at a different level from us to say, and I think that's the key question, what do you see that I don't see? And then to be open to hearing that, even if it stings a little bit. And then I think that's where coaching comes in. You know, exactly. Everyone in the company is being given the opportunity to reach out for coaching. And I know that can be a little intimidating. And at the same time, it's a great way to go outside the system, you know, to work on problems and get the help we need.
I had an Aspen colleague last week have a coaching call. And before the call, they sent me a 2-page email. And they had had an encounter with somebody else that had really stirred them up. And it was just 2 pages of venting. Mm-hmm. And then when they got on the call, they apologized. And I said, actually, no, that's a good thing that a coach can be for, because either you're gonna offload those feelings and turn the volume down on them, or you're gonna hold them in and then they're gonna come out sideways. And then we had a really productive coaching call about how his guiding principles and how he wanted to do his work. Now that he had offloaded all that emotional baggage, he was able to get to his thinking and actually have a very productive conversation with another colleague where a mess had occurred.
I love that. That's the way it's supposed to work. So
exactly.
That's great.
Exactly. Yeah, so what's the next obstacle that you see?
I think the one that that we put next is to look at how all of this is much easier to do. And the integrity framework is much easier to use when the design and the promises are all clear, when everything is clear. But what about when things aren't clear And right now we're in a situation where many things are not clear. I mean, all the way from the culture to our families, workplaces, as well as just things that are unique to Aspen. And so what happens when things aren't clear? And what often happens is that we just kind of go dormant. We put our heads down. we try to set the lack of clarity aside and just push through and do our work. I think it's important for us to look at, what do I do when things are not clear? And then to think about how the integrity framework can help with that.
Yeah. So if it's not clear, if you don't get into action to get it clear, the impact of that is going to be bad decisions. And that will ripple all the way through. And so as you begin to see that, that can give you some determination to step into a place that might have some discomfort for you, knowing that if you'll engage the discomfort, that you're going to get a better outcome.
But I don't like discomfort.
Right.
I just want to put my head down and wait for somebody somewhere to make things clear to me.
Exactly. I mean, your response there is the nature of human nature. That you're not a bad person because that's true. It's true for everybody who's listening to this podcast. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, "I hope I get a little discomfort today." but I think a part of this conversation is we're having to shift the way that we think, and to be able to say, "Okay, I know this is going to be uncomfortable." Actually, what helps me with that is to recognize that I don't get to choose that there will be comfortability, if that's a good word. I'm either going to have discomfort because it's not clear and we get a bad decision and that becomes discomfort, or I'm going to experience discomfort by having the conversation to get it clear. Either way, we have discomfort, but with one way, we get poorer results. We get we don't reach our goals. We don't meet our standards. Where on the other, we're growing our capacity to be able to do those things.
And I think right now, Aspen is literally growing its capacity to be able to do those things, because mm-hmm. there are some places where things are still getting clear. How the studios will work, how they'll work with the disciplines and the functional groups, to think about, you know, how do we think about the studios differently and those groups differently? And right now, things are emerging. Everything isn't crystal clear and may not ever be crystal clear because the world is changing so fast.
Well, I think one of the things that helps with clarity, and we've talked about this in the webinar and in the other podcast, is that we return to agreements. So we could go all the way back to the beginning of this podcast where we talked about communication between the studio and the disciplines. One of the really high leverage things that studios could be doing is developing agreements with the people, the leaders in the disciplines, about how they're going to communicate with one another, about how frequently, about what kinds of things they have to communicate on, about how, you know, about what happens when they have differences of opinion. It's just so much easier to have a written agreement to return to rather than this being personal and it's, you know, it's between you and me. That asking and answering the question, what are the agreements we need to be making within the studio, between the studio and the various disciplines, is a really high leverage way of moving this conversation and this framework ahead.
And having the flexibility to know that agreements change.
Right.
But that's something that we need to address.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you make an agreement and then you begin to say, oh, this is not completely workable. As we tried to live into this agreement, we discovered this and this. Okay, well, let's modify the agreement and then let's give our word to honoring the agreement.
And this is where sometimes we use the language of experimenting. Let's try it on.
Right.
Let's do this for a while and see what happens, so that it's not the kind of situation where we have to make an agreement that's going to last, you know, through eternity, but that we can have the flexibility of making some agreements and then seeing
exactly.
how they work.
Exactly.
So the last obstacle. Mm-hmm, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you what the last obstacle was.
The last obstacle is it's just not workable. And it doesn't have integrity when we're not having any fun.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny. I think often we think integrity is really serious business, but the truth is we're designed for joy. We're designed for meaningful work. We're, you know, our design is to do big things together.
And our design, that. Yeah, our design is deep connection with other human beings. All of those, and I want to say, though, because of the nature of helping people learn how to do this stuff, I have regular coaching conversations with people who are expressing that joy and that growing connection to me, where, you know, where they're talking about how useful this work is and how they're stepping into some places they've never stepped into, how adventurous that feels. And you can't see me on a podcast, but I'll say to them when they do that, I'll say, reach over, take your right hand and reach over on your left shoulder and pat yourself on the back because you're having fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. A culture that names the wins, that can celebrate, that encourages each other. And I'll just name, that looks different for different people.
Totally.
You know, there are people who are having fun doing the work together and other people who want to do the work and then go have fun. And there are people who are really effusive with encouragement. And there are other people who give very targeted, specific encouragement in particular ways. Next weekend, my daughter and I will be getting together after not having seen each other in a while. I'll be going to her state for a meeting. And she keeps texting me, we are going to have so much fun. We are going to have so much fun. And my thought was, well, first of all, I don't appreciate the pressure. And second of all, between me and her dad, I'm not the fun one, right? I'm not. And yet, understanding there's a way that I can show up with her that isn't the way her dad would, but is a way to be encouraging with her and to celebrate and to do the things that she feels like would be fun.
Yeah.
And I think Aspen is in a place of really wanting to continue to create a culture where there is a design, where things are positive, where we're having the hard conversations, but we're also celebrating the wins and encouraging the good things that we see.
Yeah, and that's the work. We're not saying that you know that we can answer every question in this podcast or in a coaching call so that you can move forward with the integrity framework without any obstacles. In fact, we're saying exactly the opposite, that learning this framework has just got some inherent obstacles that are going to happen, and you're going to need to pay attention to them. So it helps me when somebody says, well, this is one of the obstacles. Then when I hit that obstacle, rather than having the sense of, oh, there's something wrong, I can say, oh, Jim and Tricia said this was going to happen, so this must be a normal part of the process. That's actually a helpful way, at least for me, to learn.
And so the learning means, you know, maybe you come back and listen to these podcasts again when that happens, or maybe you resist the temptation to blame someone or to shut down and instead be able to say, this is about the learning. The obstacle is here to help me learn something new.
Well, we believe deeply, and we think Aspen believes this as well, that human beings are designed to face challenges and to be really creative in solving those challenges. There's something about God creates with God's word and we're created in God's image. And so there's something about us creating that helps us to feel really alive and fully human.
And we know that y'all do that every day. And we're looking forward to a time when the integrity framework is just second nature at Aspen. And so until then, know that our team is here to help. Take care.